Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Joining me today is Jessica Grande, the co-founder of Levatus with over 10 years of experience in the financial services industry, including high net worth advisory, investment research, and wealth planning. She's also experienced in strategies, design, and implementation for family businesses. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Your bio is included in our show notes for our listeners to get a full feel of who you are and what you do, but I'd love if you could just start off by being able to talk a little bit more about yourself and what you do at Levatus.
Great. So to give you a big picture overview of who I am and how I got to co-founding Levatus. And so born and raised in Massachusetts, so very love the topic of your podcast. And I got my undergraduate degree in economics and I got an MBA, and I've always been interested in finance. I started in college, I started investing in the stock market, and I was very intrigued by it, by being able to, you know, from a small level, buying pieces of a company, watching them grow, and that analysis. So that's what got me into the field. Over time, I really enjoyed the personal aspect of working with individuals and families to help merge the two interests of investing along with their life goals. So about 7 years ago, a former coworker of mine, we stayed in touch with, along with a few of my other partners, we launched Levatus. And so Levatus is an integrated wealth services firm. And so we provide wealth counsel and investment management to individuals and families. So we try and work as a real partner with these families, and we specifically help them during times of transition in their lives, whether it is, you know, having a child, or we have a program for children and wealth where we help teach people about, you know, how to raise your children to know about wealth services and that sort of thing. We also help clients maybe that are going through divorce, or even on the later end of the spectrum when they're trying to pass down assets to their children or grandchildren, how to organize that in a way that helps them put their values into it, as well as make it financially responsible and the best way to do it. So.
Absolutely. And I love that you focus on transitions, because in all these different stages of life, there's often so many financial considerations that you need to think about, whether it's beneficiaries or maybe you're getting another home, or there's so many other factors coming into play here. So I can imagine that your clients really value having someone like yourself on their side to guide them through the process and all of these new things as they navigate it moving forward.
Yes, exactly. And it's funny, we have Levatus signature services. And so these are different, almost like a menu of different services that we provide to our clients. And what we've been finding is that we've been developing them exactly as you mentioned, times of transition are when you need to merge sort of like what your big picture goal is, what your individual relationships are with your family, in addition to the financial aspect. And that's something that we feel is like missing almost in the industry. Like we do feel like a lot, you know, new clients that have come to us, they'll explain like, oh, you know, I never talked to my other wealth advisor about, you know, this divorce I'm going through, or I mean, maybe not divorce, but maybe, you know, other smaller transitions that they really need the financial side of it and to piece it together. And so what we try and do is we try and focus on what we know about the client and their ultimate goals and try and merge it with the dollars and cents of it. And so I think people have found that to be very helpful, and I enjoy it. It's very fulfilling for me personally in order to work with someone that's coming from a place of maybe stress and confusion and like overwhelming decisions, and then very strategically and analytically coming to a decision that fits with some of the maybe more non-analytical like feelings and values that they may have, to make a very thorough product for them and then path for them to move forward.
Right. And so you mentioned a point that I want to go a little bit deeper into, which is goals. And I think that, speaking from myself, how I feel is that I struggled with thinking of what I wanted to achieve with my money. It's like, well, what goals do I even want to set? It's like I almost didn't know where to start. And I imagine that other people likely feel the same way, as they're just not sure what they should be working towards. And so, do you have any recommendations about what people can keep in mind as they're starting to think about what types of goals they might want to set for themselves with their money or anything like that?
Absolutely. And so this is obviously, it's extremely individualized. And so everyone has a different path for them, to take forward. Some of the things we think about when helping our clients is we tend to have really in-depth conversations with our clients. So we tend to get to know them pretty deeply in the short term when they're onboarding. So some things to think about, you have to, I guess in order to make specific goals, it depends on where you are in life, right? And I guess what you're looking to accomplish over the next 1, 3, and 5 years. So for someone on the younger side, I think typical goals might be paying for graduate school, paying off student loans, buying a home. And so things like for that, what we would look at is, okay, if you have these three, let's say you have undergraduate loans, you have the goal of going to graduate school, and you want to buy a house. So then we start digging into the numbers of it, and we typically always start with the budget, what your income is and what your expenses are. And people tend to dislike that. I love digging into the budget. I think it really is a great way for people to have a sense of control over their financial destiny. And so sometimes, because people don't like looking at it, they put it out of their mind, and then they just get stressed every time they run their credit or debit card. But maybe they don't need to if they actually kind of narrowed it down. And so when we typically look at a client budget, we put it the items into categories like your core living expenses and your enjoying life expenses, because both of those are very important to the equation. And so we dig into that with them. And then so once we set that, it's not necessarily saying stop spending. It's just saying, where are you spending in relation to your income? And if you are spending more than your income, then that's obviously not going to help you meet your goals. If you're saving, so we start there. And once we start there and see where things are, maybe someone has a lot of excess savings that they could deploy to the stock market. Or maybe someone is prepaying. Like recently, I had a client who is very excited to be prepaying their mortgage, but they're more, and then they didn't have a lot in their retirement account, but their mortgage had one of the historically low rates of the last couple of years, so maybe like 2.75%. So we had a conversation of like, well, ultimately one of your goals is to retire early. So by prepaying this mortgage, you could take what you're prepaying and put it into the stock market, and so you would, get closer to this goal. So obviously that's a pretty individualized plan, but I think it involves, like you said, multiple conversations to kind of dig through to see what someone's goals are, and then help them prioritize based on where they are now, what they're doing in the short term, and what their long-term trajectory looks like.
I love that. And speaking of goals, and you mentioned young people, which made me think of this question, is that for someone like myself, I'm 27, getting married next month and have a lot of friends who are in a similar boat.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I have a lot of friends. We're always talking about this conversation. A lot of friends who say, well, when do you figure out when you and your significant other like merge bank accounts, and when do your finances become one? And that's something that people I or conversations I hear are always happening. And so I'd love to kind of dive further into that, because we do have quite a few younger listeners, and I think that kind of covering that would be a really good focus for them.
Oh, that's very interesting. And I feel like it could be like a theoretical landmine too, right? But obviously you have to talk to your partner, your significant other, and hopefully by the time you're about to get married, you already might have some sort of understanding of expenses or how people live. I have seen successful couples organize their personal finances in multiple ways. Like I've seen successful, some of our clients, everything is separate. They have separate checking account, separate savings account, and then they have a home checking account. And then let's say the other partner has the same. And so they kind of divvy up based on maybe income level. If one spouse makes significantly more than the other spouse. Maybe they put 60%, the other spouse puts 40% of the monthly expenses, and they live out of one check, they live out of one checking account. Then they might have another savings account to start saving for joint expenses, like buying a home or children or and that sort of thing. So then, but then people feel a sense of autonomy that they could go and maybe have their own checking account to buy someone a present, right? Like, so it doesn't show up in the joint account, or mm-hmm. that they just know something is in their name, you know, just for transitioning into, you know, being married from being like single to married. It's a little hard to kind of give up all your individuality. That being said, I've also seen other couples tend to get a little closer to merging when they buy a home together or they move in together. And mm-hmm. so I think, what a lot of our clients do who are maybe right outside of the just getting married, eventually a big thing when you get married or like soon after, especially when you have kids, is starting estate planning. Yes. And so sometimes if people during that process create a trust, like a family trust, then they'll start putting the funds into a family trust. And so that's kind of like the next step. But I would suggest for those your friends or you and your friends as you're starting out with your significant other to start having the budget conversations a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And that will give you a really good insight as to whether you should fully merge or whether you should take a more gradual approach. What I've done in my own relationship is that it was a real gradual approach. Now we sort of have, you know, like one checking account and then our savings accounts and we fully merged, but it took a long time as, you know, I started, you know, closing out and aggregating accounts. So I think long story short, you should probably start with the budget and go from there.
Lots of good things to think about. And you brought up a good point about thinking about that sooner rather than later and just having those transparent and honest conversations to see where people are.
Yeah, I think, I mean, as you probably know, like money is one of the biggest reasons people get divorced. And mm-hmm. so I think waiting until after the wedding to have these big conversations is a little challenging. So I think, you know, sort of going through, you know, monthly expenses and, you know, it not being a surprise what someone likes to spend every month on, I don't know, getting your nails done or golf or whatever it is, at least you're aware of that going into it and how that person or how you as a team expect to pay for it. So
absolutely. I love that. And now switching yeah. gears into the business owner side. So sure. One thing that business owners are really thinking about is not kind of working because they have to, but working because they want to. So being able to kind of have that full control of when they retire because they've set things up in place in order to make that possible. Mm-hmm. And so what would you recommend for business owners who might be listening here, who are thinking about how they can optimize their money and ensure that they are all set and have a really solid plan?
Sure. I know as a small business owner, you know, your business can be your passion, but it's also mm-hmm. a huge responsibility. And also a lot of people, their net worth is really wrapped up in the illiquid asset that is their business. So that can be a challenge as well. So some things, as you mentioned, getting close to retirement is having a very clear and strategic exit plan. So like you said, a transition. So I have this business. I've run it successfully for 20 years. It's part of my identity now. What do I do? You know, you might think, or I might think, of course I want my children to take it over. But if you've never had that conversation or they've never had that training, you could be really disappointed when they say, I have no interest. I don't want anything to do with it. So, so I think starting early, like 5, 10 years, whatever, whenever your retirement is, if there's not like a clear exit plan, you need to start thinking of that. Other assets or other ideas to think about is a lot of business owners sometimes, I think, neglect themselves because they're so their own personal finance, because they're so invested in their business, like their business accounts, mm-hmm. that how their business is running. So I do think having a financial advisor who is slightly, you know, arm's length from their business, it could help someone to come up with ideas of setting up separate accounts in your own personal name so that it's not wrapped up only in the business.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And actually, lastly, as you had mentioned retirement, trying to optimize tax sheltered accounts would be helpful, like making sure, especially if it's a smaller business that might have a few employees, that you take advantage of setting up, whether it's a simple IRA or, you know, some sort of 401k, and to not neglect that, because it is important to start setting aside funds tax-free to then grow and support your retirement. Because I do know a lot of business owners tend to think, oh, well, why would I do that? I'm just going to sell my business. And then when my business is sold, that's my retirement. But I think that's great. But I think you need to plan along the way as well and take advantage of any tax-free opportunities you might have, or tax-advantaged opportunities.
Definitely. And why not do both? Why not sell the business and have a 401k?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think like things that you can be doing each year, each month, it really, you know, adds up over time. And I think sometimes the more administrative side of the business sometimes can get pushed to the side when there's more exciting things like business growth or like content creation or meeting new people and closing deals, as opposed to kind of the more administrative side of running the business. And also, like, when you're in the thick of it, you know, days, weeks, and months tend to fly by, and then all of a sudden it's a couple years later and then you didn't set it up, even though it's been on your to-do list, and it always gets pushed down. So
definitely. I love those suggestions. And when someone is thinking about working with a financial advisor, what are some qualities or skills or anything like that that they should look out for to know if it's the right fit?
Sure. And I love that you said the right fit. That's something that we think about a lot. And so before we take on a client, much like before a client would hire us, we want to make sure it's a good fit. Part of the reason why we started our firm is that we could work with people who really understood our model and our background and where we're coming from and what we hope to provide to clients. So a couple things that I would recommend someone questions to ask about fit is to understand what services you're actually going to be getting when you hire a financial advisor, because it can run from maybe one investment plan, one meeting a year, and it's one fee, or it can be like full, you know, white glove service, you know, where the investment advisor is cutting checks to pay your taxes. They are, you know, working with your accountant and your state attorney on a weekly basis. And it can really run the gamut. So just fully understanding before you compare apples and oranges, what you're getting. So you could say, oh, this advisor's fee is three times this advisor's fee. But then if you don't drill down, like, it can really differentiate. Second, I think someone should really look into, you know, high level, like what someone's investment strategy is. And so, and what I mean by that is not necessarily understanding, you know, what stocks, not understanding, but like, let's say someone wants to do a lot of trading and they expect their advisor to be trading in their account every day and buying stocks on a daily basis. Other advisors, what we typically do is we tend to buy for the long term. So we have a more buy and hold strategy. For some people, that's great. Other people want a little more action in their portfolio. So someone who wants that type of investment strategy wouldn't be happy with a buy and hold. Someone who has a very low risk tolerance and doesn't like seeing changes in the portfolio, doesn't like seeing email confirmations come in because it makes them think they need to dig into it a little bit, might not like a very a portfolio that there's a lot of trades going on. And that could severely impact whether or not you're happy with your advisor, if that makes sense. And then, like you said, just sort of fit, like, is your financial advisor should be someone that you like speaking to and like calling, and should make you feel like you are capable and you're in control and you can handle, you know, your accounts. So sometimes I found within the industry, you know, there might not be the fit, that type of fit, where people think, oh, I don't want to bother them, I don't want to call them, I think this is a dumb question. When in fact, like, if you're hiring I don't want my advisor to think I'm dumb for not knowing this. But, you know, you should call your advisor and be able to ask them any question without fearing like judgment or like they might think poorly of you. And so I think those are three good things to look into when you're hiring an advisor.
Those are great considerations. And you brought up a good point earlier on in this episode as well, is that like you should be hearing from your advisor overall. You gave an example of someone who just never heard from their advisor during times that were really important to kind of get that expertise. So I love the suggestions and tips you shared there about what people can kind of keep in mind.
Yes, exactly.
And I'd love to talk more about your entrepreneurial journey too, knowing that you're the co-founder at Lovatus and have built this company. I'm always so curious talking to people who work with a few co-founders and just kind of hear how that came about and how that works for them. So I'd love to hear how you manage running a business with a few other people and how that kind of came about.
Sure. As I had mentioned, the CEO or the chief investment officer of our company now, she and I worked together a number of years ago at a different firm within our industry. And then I left and I got some experience in different realms of financial services. I worked for a financial software as a service company, and then I worked in endowment management. So basically, so colleges or whatever nonprofits that have endowments. I was an investment consultant for, I worked with an investment consultancy firm for that. She had stayed with another wealth manager for a number of years, and I think at some point she wanted to just do her own thing. And then so she and I had always been very friendly and always talked about entrepreneurship together. And so she reached out one day and was like, "All right, I really think I want to do this. Do you want to do this with me?" I'm like, "I would love to." Because she's, this partner of mine, she's always super, super smart, super knowledgeable, very, we think very similarly as it relates to client interactions, which is the heart of what we do and how a client should be treated and how we should run a business. And sort of like we have the same values and principles. And I think that's a pretty important thing. Like if you're start entering into this a partnership type relationship, it's almost like a marriage, like what you were saying earlier. If you're not on the same page with certain things, then it could be sort of hard. Where she and I had worked together for, let's say, 6 years or 7 years beforehand, pretty closely. So then she had she had two other now partners that she had worked with in various other aspects of her life. And then so she kind of brought us all together and we all clicked.
Yeah, and that's so nice that you have a group of you to rely on. I imagine having such complementary skills and strengths that you're able to really be able to continue to grow the practice.
Yes, exactly. No, exactly. Definitely about different strengths. Yeah, it's funny. And so she and I used to always joke about various entrepreneurs, like back a million years ago. And so one of the funny things we used to joke about was starting like a hot dog food truck back when food trucks were really. But the funny thing is, it's like she doesn't really eat meat, and neither do I. But like we just, I don't know why we came up with that, but we used to call it, we would call it like chow dogs was the name of our feet, which it never came to be. It was just always this hypothetical kind of joke we came up with. And so she knew from the get that I was always into kind of entrepreneurial type things. So,
I love that. And what
yeah.
are some things that you'd say you've learned along the way throughout your entrepreneurial journey or roadblocks that you've kind of had to come through?
Sure. Such a great question. I can think of so many sort of highs and lows, as you know, through the entrepreneurial journey. I think one of the biggest things is trying to stay true to your mission and sort of have a good understanding of who you are and what you're trying to provide. When we were first starting to grow, we had a few potential clients come our way, and they wanted a service and a product that we were probably like 60% of what they wanted, but that other 40 was just not our wheelhouse and something. And although we might be able to do it, it wasn't our area of expertise, and it wasn't something that we liked doing. So we were, it was one of those, it's a hard decision to not take on a potential client, especially in the first month or so you're running this business. But if we think back on that, and like, you're so glad we didn't take them, because that, although it would have been a nice client and nice to add to revenue for the first year, it just would have really taken a lot of time away from other sort of marketing and client efforts. So I think number one is, although it's kind of scary, but don't be afraid to sort of not take on clients or business that you think aren't fully aligned with what you're willing to offer. I think this is true, especially in a service type business. It's different, obviously, selling products, but as you probably know from your business, if someone's looking to hire you to do something that you don't necessarily do, it's not going to have positive outcomes, and it's going to be very stressful for you. So
yes. Oh, I love that advice. And that's something that I feel like I've tried to stick true to as well, is like, whether it's getting that gut feeling where you're like, I don't know, something seems off about this project. I'm not sure if I want to move forward or anything else. I think it's so important to follow what feels right to you.
Yeah, and it's really hard. It's easier said than done, for sure. Yes. Because, you know, when you start any entrepreneurial venture or you enter into a new relationship with anybody, you always have this feeling of like, I hope this is the right decision. But, you know, I think listening to your gut a little bit and really trying to figure out, like, can we deliver to this client 100%? And if we can, okay, great. Do we want to? And so, you know, getting yes on both sides, I think, is the key.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great advice. And it kind of makes me think of how, like, when you say, I forget the exact quote, but it's something along the lines of, when you say no to one thing, it means that you're able to say yes to another thing. And so even though you're turning down an opportunity, like, you're just providing the space and the ability to be able to accept an even better client or an even better project in the future.
Yes. No, we 100% agree. I 100% agree on that. It's hard when you, at the time to accept that, but I think it's the best decision overall.
Absolutely.
So we've had a few of those over the course of the last few years, and it just makes me believe even stronger when we take on a client that's a great fit and we can provide such a great service for them.
Definitely. And for anyone who's listening, who's looking to get into the financial services industry, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, financial services is a huge industry. It's multifaceted. So I think trying to research a little bit about the roles that are available would be really helpful, and trying to match those roles with your skill sets and what you like doing. Mm-hmm. So if you find this is the highest paid job around, but then if you're going to be miserable every day, it might not be worth it. So you have to sort of match the roles that you want to put your skills into. And then also sort of like what the day-to-day job looks like. Like, is it a job that involves a lot of travel? Is it a job that it's like a 12-hour day and you might not have the work-life balance that you're looking for? So just try and look into that. Also, something I would suggest for someone newly entering the field is see what the people are doing a couple levels above them and say, oh, could I see myself doing that? And take it from there.
Those are great things to think about. And as people are thinking about, you mentioned like a good point about work-life balance. I mean, that's one thing I'm always curious about, is how other people within client services specifically kind of structure that. I know me personally, mm-hmm. I feel like many other people feel the same way. Like, it's almost really hard to turn off those thoughts because you work so closely with people. And even outside of working hours, like, your mind is just always going. So for you personally, how do you set that boundary with yourself and ensure that you're able to kind of focus on work during work hours, and then in non-work hours, how you're able to focus on yourself and your family?
Yeah, I wish I had a great answer for that, but I'm not really sure, right? So a lot of my clients, you know, known them for a number of years. So if someone texts me on a Saturday evening or something, I want to just like text them right back or help them with something. But something that I've been able to do a lot, like, I have two kids and two daughters, and so I find myself being able to take a couple hours in the late afternoon, maybe like when the market's closed, and like, you know, pick them up from school at 4 and take them to an activity and then come back. And then maybe after dinner, log on and kind of, if anything's come through, send an email out before bed or something. But mm-hmm. I don't really have a good answer for that, unfortunately. But I guess my answer would be maybe block off, you know, be strategic about blocking off hours of your day where you're like, okay, my to-do list is XYZ. I'll do that between, I don't know, whatever, before four. And then between four and seven, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And those are, that's family life. That's just personal life. And then anything that's come through, I can see. And if nothing's come through that's urgent, then forget about it till tomorrow, or I'll just log on and just finish it off. So that way I can start my day on a clean slate.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point too about maybe not necessarily having that perfect balance, but having that flexibility where it's choosing it later in the afternoon or later in the day to take a step back to, like you said, be present with your loved ones. And then at other points in the day, whether it's earlier in the morning or later at night, logging back on to get some stuff done. I love that approach.
Yeah, I think that's I've been very lucky to be able to take that as being, co-founding a business, you're able to do that. So it's sort of like a double-edged sword, I guess. Like sometimes it's great because you can build it in, but other times because you're the partner or the business owner and you have a huge responsibility for your clients, you have to stay on later. But for the most part, I think on, 8 out of 10 days, you're able to follow your pre-planned schedule, I would imagine. I mean, sometimes if the market's going crazy and something insane is happening, that your schedule goes out the window. But for the most part, I think you're able to block off time appropriately.
Absolutely. Jessica, as we get closer to the end of this episode, one of my favorite questions to ask our guests is what their favorite local businesses are to support. So for you, what would those businesses be?
That is such a fun question. So our office is on Newbury Street. So I love going to the Thinking Cup. It's like a coffee and sandwich shop. So when I'm on Newbury Street, Thinking Cup is my favorite. And then I live in West Roxbury. And so my favorite business is Delini. It's a gelato store, and they just
Ooh.
have the most delicious gelato I've ever had. And we love it. And I have to tell my daughters after school, like, no more Delini this week. And the owner, she's so nice. Her name is Victoria, and she even says, like, when we show up too many times, she goes, "I think you've had enough this week." I'm like, "I think so too."
Oh, that's
Yeah. She goes,
funny.
"That's too much." I'm like, "I know." But anyway, yeah, those are the two businesses I really like. So
I love
yeah.
that.
Actually,
Jessica.
one more business I do like
Yeah.
in West Roxbury. It's called Recreo. It's another coffee shop, but it's owned by a husband and wife. They're from Nicaragua, and they have a family farm in Nicaragua. And then all the beans for the coffee they roast come from the family farm, and they roast it and sell it from West Roxbury. And so
Nice.
what they do is they offer a lot of educational opportunities for the people who live on the farm and their children. And it's just a really, really, and the coffee's great, though. I mean, obviously, but I just love the story and the mission, and they're very nice. So,
Yeah, that's awesome. Jessica, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today and share all about yourself and Lovatus. I would love to give you the opportunity to share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect further.
great. Our website is lovatuswealth.com. So that's Levatus wealth.com. Or, you can always send me an email. My email address is jgrande@lovatuswealth.com.
Perfect. And I will link to those in the show notes that way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much again for coming on today's show.
Thank you. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.